Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Motormouth Podcast with me, Tim Silvey. Today, we have Spanners, Richard Reddy Spanners on the show from the Missed Apex podcast. He's got a very interesting life. Ex-military man. He was in the military for 10 years before getting into radio in Cambridge and eventually the Missed Apex podcast, which is absolutely flying. He's built up a really good audience, a very large audience, in fact, and is growing his empire with some other shows around Formula E and MotoGP that he's bringing into the Missed Apex family as well. We had a really good chat for an hour or so, spoke about all sorts of different subjects in Formula One, put the world to rights. I hope you enjoy it. Here it is, our conversation with Spanners. Spanners, a very warm welcome to the Motormouth podcast. How are you?
I think you've made a mistake here, Tim. I'm looking at your YouTube retina and you've got Alex Brundle, Laura Winter, my goodness, Lawrence Barreto. So there'll be people watching and listening going, who?
Who's this guy?
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. But we have at Missed Apex Podcast and Spanners World, you know, we've got a corner of the F1 internet. And that's just the way things work these days, isn't it? You can have a fairly large following, yet be anonymous.
Well, exactly. And same as us. I mean, we have our own little corner of the internet and we love it. But you do yourself a disservice, Spanners. You're, in my eyes, you're a celebrity these days, mate.
I think that you can be a niche internet micro celebrity. I think that might be a real term. So, you know, if we put on an event, people will come. If I say, hey, guys, let's go go-karting, people will turn up and go go-karting, as you do with your events as well.
Yeah.
And you know, we have a call to action in our kit bag. You know, if we say, hey guys, come and check this thing out, people will go and do that, and brands understand that. So we can monetize, we can have a community, we can do all the fun things, but I can still go to Tesco's, Tim.
Absolutely. And that's what you need. You're doing a meet and greet, aren't you? Is it Miami?
Yeah, we're going to Miami for the Grand Prix. I'm really, really excited because, you know, a lot of my F1 impressions and views and stuff like that are from America. And we've really connected well, I think, with the new DTS fans. Well, people were sitting there going, oh, these DTS fans, they don't know nothing, Tim. They don't know nothing. They haven't even been watching since 1872 like I have. And really, the truth is, when you're new to a sport, and everyone's been new to a sport, within a year, you know 90% of what's going on. And really, it's just a bit of historical context that you're lacking. So I'm actually on the Ringer F1 podcast as well. And that is really mainly DTS fans. And, you know, they've just come in with a really decent attitude on the whole, which is, we're enjoying it. We're here to learn. Yes, please, Uncle Spanners, tell us about the olden days, but not too much. So, you know, going over to the US is a really exciting thing for me. And I know the Miami Grand Prix hasn't really popped. So I'm wondering, you know, can Miami just deliver a sprinkle of rain, maybe, to make it interesting? But we're going over there. There'll be three of the Missed Apex crew. And we're doing a meet up with a local motorsport club there. So, yeah, I think we'll have about 100 people turning up at the moment. And it's really a bit of a battle with the imposter syndrome to go, oh, no, 100 people have driven 20 minutes from the Grand Prix track to sit here, and now I've got to say things about F1. But hopefully it'll be a lot of fun.
It'll be good. I might come and gate crash. I'll be there from the... I fly on Tuesday, so I'll land some, I think, late Tuesday night or Wednesday morning or something like that. I'm not sure.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I'll be there Wednesday to Monday, so definitely time for a pint. So if you pop along, we've got a hot seat on the mic as well, so we'll involve Tim on the hot seat, and we'll have a quiz, test your F1 knowledge. Ooh. And then they're playing a classic race. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm awful at quizzes.
Me too.
You know, for someone who does F1 content creation, and then we do quizzes on our show, and I come last in all the quizzes because it's just that recall of who was Heinz Harald Frentzen's teammate in Formula 2. You go, I don't know.
No, I don't know. My knowledge is fairly poor in that way. But yeah, I'll definitely pop along, have a beer, happy to jump on the mic and heckle from the stands as well. But let's take it back a little bit, Spanners. Let's go back and look at you as an individual. So
me.
Take us back. Where's home? Where did you come from? What shaped you as an individual? What sort of child were you?
Weird. I was a weird kid, and it's hard to admit because you don't know what other kids are like when you're a kid. But now you can look back and you go, yeah, I was a bit of a weird kid. Very difficult, strange childhood. I'm going to write a book about it one day. But, you know, it's just a very odd characters, a difficult environment to kind of thrive in. And you can't undo that. If you are a weird kid, you generally become a bit of a weird adult. And I do wonder sometimes with like content creators, most comedians, content creators, you look at them and you go, something weird happened to you at some point. So you kind of just lean into that. I'm not as cut and dry, as sensible, you know, like who's your you know, our mate Tom,
yep.
You know, Tuomo, you know, and he's dynamic and a great presenter. And I go, I don't have that kind of elite cut, but I can bring my energy in from that upbringing. So you go from weird kid to then into, you know, into the army, because I wasn't able to thrive academically. And I was kicked out of sixth form college.
Oh.
I was, I got 3 months in, and technically I was invited to leave. So technically I left on my own terms, Tim. But, you know, and then suddenly you end up at 19 in the army, and there's no not weird ex-squaddies as well.
Yeah.
So weird kid, weird ex-squaddie, start making content, and you go, well, maybe some of that background contributes to why people will tune into something maybe a little different.
Wow. So how long were you in the army for?
I got clear after 6 years, Tim. I was out. I was on my way to recovery, and then foolishly I got pulled back in for another 4 years. So
wow.
Yeah, it was 10 years service, and that's a fairly uninteresting service. You know, people, when you talk about being in the military, they want to hear stories like Black Hawk Down, and it really is much more kind of naffy pub oriented. Yeah, even operational tours are not what people think they are. There's a lot of standing around. There's a lot of patrolling. I mean, I can tell you about being super hot sometimes and being super hot in riot gear. But yeah, it's never the war stories people want.
No. Well, thank you for your service, Spanners, anyway. I mean, 10 years is that's a good stint. So when did motorsport come on the radar then? When's that happened?
I think, like a lot of people, you are very influenced by what your parents are watching. So for me, my dad's weekend consisted of beer and sport. So it was going through, you know, his favorite sports on TV. And if you want to spend time with dad, the choices are either rugby or motorsport or motorbikes, actually. And I'm classing motorbikes as different to motorsport because bikes are weird. They like lean all the way over and they don't fall down.
Mm.
That isn't right.
Bizarre.
So of his main loves, rugby's incoherent garbage. No one knows the rules of rugby. Respect to the athletes. They're running at each other really hard. It looks difficult. But when the whistle blows, when the referee blows the whistle, not one person except the referee knows why. Yeah, it's just random rules. So of the sports my dad would sit and watch, Formula One is just, you know, magical. And it was the Nigel Mansell era for me. I know, I don't look old enough. You don't have to say it.
You don't, Spanners. You don't look old. Come on, how old are you?
I'm 43.
Same as me.
Yeah, and look at you. You look like a thumb. No, I'm joking. a wrinkly thumb out of the bath. No.
Gordon Ramsay.
Looking young is it's an interesting one. So I would say I probably present about 10 years younger. That's not unfair. People would guess that I was in my mid-30s. Professionally, that's a massive disadvantage when you're younger because people just don't automatically look at you for management roles. So into my late 20s, I still looked like a teen. I still got ID'd for alcohol and bars well into my 30s. But it really does. I mean, you only have to look at Yuki Tsunoda and the absolute disrespect he gets. Everything that is said about Yuki Tsunoda is infantilizing. So he's either cheeky or precocious or, you know, Kimi Raikkonen, when he was acting like a brat on the radio, was, oh, what a lad. Yeah. He's such a lad. He just speaks his mind.
Full of charisma.
He's so cool. Yeah. Whereas Tsunoda, it's all infantilization. So it can be a real disadvantage. But the advantage now is that we're middle-aged and crusty, but maybe I can still present and come across as a little younger. So I'll enjoy the benefit now that I've been through the other side.
And fabulous facial hair. So well done on that.
Oh, don't. Look, this is the best a half Filipino can do with facial hair, okay? So I'm trying, all right?
It's better than mine. My pathetic sort of graying, gingerish thing that's going on today.
When I shave, my family gets like super upset.
Yeah.
So every now and then, you know, even if you forget the guard and you go a bit short and then you shave it off, the family goes into crisis talks. Mm. They start talking about diets. You know, do we need to, as a family, have whole grain rice instead of white rice? My daughter cried once.
Yeah, I can relate. I remember my dad had a wicked handlebar tash. And when he shaved it off, I was in bits. I cried my eyes out. Couldn't believe it. I was like, who is this imposter in my home? But anyway, look, enough of the facial hair chat. Let's talk about Mr. Apex. So you came from, after the military, presumably you went through a bit of a radio stint and Mr. Apex came along. When was Mr. Apex born?
A radio. It was just a phase, the radio. It's just a phase, Dad. I'll get over it. No, radio's the dream. And it's a stupid dream because radio's dying, basically. But yeah, since I was little, I was always sending my, I sent my tapes in to...
Tapes. You might have to explain what a tape is.
Don't, because with my Gen Alpha 12-year-old daughter, I talked about a Walkman and she was like, Dad, what's a Walkman? And I'm like, oh, okay, you won't know a Walkman. It's the thing you put your tape cassette in and then you can listen to it, you know, like you would with your phone. And she said, Dad, what's a tape cassette? Yeah. And I died.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? It's like, who's the comedian that did the joke about, and this is a bad thing to do on a podcast, an audio podcast, but you know, the winding up the window action on your car, you know, you do that to kids now. Anyone over sort of, I guess, 25, 30 will know. No one else
picking
will.
Picking up the phone. Ask them to mind picking up the phone. We stick our little finger and thumb out, whereas these little idiots put their palm to their face.
Yeah.
God, young people are the worst.
I tell you.
Yeah. But I would send in my audition tapes to, you know, the local radio stations. And even out of the military, I just went physically to two radio stations and handed them, I guess, the CD or whatever it was at the time. And that's really naive, because knowing what I know now, that would have just been, oh, thank you very much, filed in the bin. Because it's really, really difficult to get on, say, with BBC Radio that I did for 4 years. And watching in that time who got the opportunities, it is really crushingly elitist and nepotistic. And you see people come in, they've been introduced on a, you know, work experience because, you know, their Uncle Derek used to know Dave at the thing. And then you see them get those opportunities to then, because they're working there, they record something and then they get favored and that's how they get into the shows. And you go, oh my God, how naive I was with my little CD going, please, can I come and play radio, please? And it was actually only through Missed Apex that someone heard me and said, you should, this is the person you need to email. So it was just a listener of Missed Apex said, and which started in 2016.
Right.
He said, this is the specific person to email. Tell them I told you to email and send your show reel. And that was, and that's the in with the radio. So it was actually the Missed Apex stuff, the YouTube stuff that led to the opportunity. And I, after 10 minutes speaking to the manager there, he said, he goes, let's start you, literally 10 minutes. He goes, let's start you on a 12-week run on a Saturday. He goes, I already saw your stuff online. You're fine. I just wanted to meet you to check that you weren't insane.
Yep.
And I'd managed to cover that up for 10 minutes. And, you know, and that started the, you know, this lovely 4-year stint on BBC local radio, which I loved. And then, you know, the pandemic tore it apart. And then, not to be political, but the government absolutely savaged and destroyed the local radio about 2 years ago. So the opportunities for that were limited. But I'm on, still on Cambridge 105, doing my science and stuff.
Okay, excellent. And then Missed Apex. Now, I've been aware of Missed Apex for a long time. You've built up a really good audience there. As you say, you're sort of little corner of the internet. But it's more than that. You've got a big audience. You've got a lot of fans. You're putting on events and so on in different countries. How's it all going?
It's going really, really well. And it's only, you know, people say like, well, how do you get that? How do you get to that level? You go, yeah, it's just 10 years of banging my head against a wall. Because, you know, when we started this, 2014 actually is when I started covering. So that was the first season that I did podcasts for. And, you know, you get to the point 2016, 2017, where we had, you know, maybe 5,000 downloads a show. And you go, well, that's more than the readership of a lot of websites. Maybe we can get accreditation. So you're kind of knocking on the door saying, well, could we come to events? Could we do this? Could we have interviews with various people? And podcasts just weren't on anyone's radar in the beginning. I think now more so, but it tends to be podcasts that are associated with people. So if you're the race media. You've already got journalists on the ground. It's much easier to get those contacts. But the podcast ecosystem for F1 is actually, it's very difficult to break into just independently. So really, if you look at the top charts, it's all outfits that are being supported by big production companies. So, you know, the race is often in the top three. The BBC, Stack have got their effort with Matt and Tommy, and you know, and The Ringer, which I'm on. So for an independent podcast to be up there on a Monday in the charts has been just like, it's been a brutal assault on every little micro thing we can do. Asking our brilliant community, can you just share, just share a link, just tell your mate at the cooler and at work. And it has been like that. And if you look at our growth chart from 2016 upwards, there's no spike. There's a slight rise at Drive to Survive that everyone got. But everything else, ramping up to now, maybe 35,000 audio downloads, which to me feels giant. But that ramp has been so gradual that it is just a case of plugging away for 10 years. And it's not the answer that people want to hear. They want to hear, I found this clever advertising trick. But it's not. It's just been this really community-based thing. And I think having active communities on Facebook, we have Patreon supporters where we have a kind of a private Slack forum. And it's all those things, inviting people, you know, almost knocking on people's doors going, hey, do you want to listen to my podcast? Because there's no big platform. Like, I'm not on TV. I'm not in the street as people walk past. So yeah, it's a strange graft. But then you look at the figures and you go, well, last month, 90,000 people downloaded an episode across all our platforms. And you go, okay, that's actually significant. We have a voice in this community, even though, like I said before, you know, we're largely anonymous.
Yeah, no, it is a slog. And it's, I think you're right. And I think people think they can just start a podcast and just become big with it, which is certainly not the case. And it was interesting. I was looking at the accreditation guidelines for F1 yesterday because I wanted to see if I could try and get anything in with Miami. Which is the deadline's passed now, so it's irrelevant anyway. But I couldn't actually see any mention of podcasts at all. You know, it's all, are you a journalist? Who do you write for? It sort of feels like Formula One needs to catch up a little bit and perhaps start looking at some of these podcast, independent podcast channels.
Yeah, the things they sort of don't need to, because the podcasts are already covered by people who are accredited for other things. So they can say, well, there's loads of podcasters that are accredited. But yeah, having, what's their incentive to have people in, you know, on YouTube, if you've got a big YouTube following, you know, it says in big letters, I have 200,000 subscribers, but everyone is really cagey about sharing podcast figures because they're relatively unsexy. Mm. So I turn up, we've got our race review that might be the third highest episode F1 wise on a Monday. And if I share those download figures, that's not considered, you know, mind blowing. You know, there's no podcast with 3 million downloads. So it's sort of hard to kind of sell yourself to F1 and say, well, what are you going to add? Yeah. I found it nearly impossible. But what we can do is we can box around the fringes, put on our little events around the place.
Yeah, no, it's good. And it's pleasing to see, you know, another independent show doing its thing and making inroads. So it's great. Long may it continue. Now, you do cover Formula One. There's a lot happening in Formula One at the moment. There's lots of things in the pipeline for Formula One, not least the regulation changes coming in 2026. But before we get there, what do you think is the current health of Formula One in 2024?
Bad. What do you think?
I think it's bad. Bad. On and off track, unfortunately.
Okay, so yeah, the off track is a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
I'm really struggling with the off track stuff because I've literally had people in my inbox saying, shut up, saying, don't talk about this, that, or the other, don't touch this with a stick. So we kind of, a lot of us, I'm sure you do, have heard things, know things, are waiting for things to come out. And then from the other side, people are going, well, why aren't you giving your opinion? And I go, well, firstly, I don't have the inside scoop. I wasn't there. Secondly, people are literally saying it's dangerous or bad to mention that stuff. Yeah. Like, it's that's bad. Yeah. All of it's bad.
Yeah. No, it is. It's not in a great place at the moment off track. We haven't really talked about it too much on this show. We've kind of kept our distance from it. It's not really our cup of tea.
It's not a motorsport story, is it?
No, not really. Yeah. But I suppose the other part of it is the on track stuff. And you know, I don't know how I feel about it. I think sometimes I flip flop. So sometimes I'm like, fair play, Red Bull. Well done, you. Well done, Max. Incredible. You know, what you're doing is astonishing. Then I'm like, ugh. I turn a race on and Max gets out to the front. You just think, well, that's it. Yeah. That's that race done for another week. So I don't know. I'm kind of in both camps. What I am quite excited about is 2026 and beyond, because, you know, I've been, as you probably have, I've been following the chatter on Twitter. You know, Caroon's been quite vocal about the concerns around all this active aero and cars spinning in a straight line on simulations and stuff, which will sort itself out. But are you looking forward to that regulation change and perhaps a bit of a reset?
I'm a little bit skeptical of it. So it's the motivation behind the regulations, and you go, right, what is it they're trying to achieve? And they always paid lip service to overtaking and close racing, but they don't rip the wings off. And like, what's causing the quote unquote boring races or the things that people don't like is the massive wings, isn't it? If you could follow, if you could have a racetracks where you've got less grip because you can't just flatline every corner. If you made Spa, Eau Rouge not flat, you know, you could bring back a lot of corners to Formula One that were great corners. What's the one at Silverstone? The flat out after the old pit lane, not Copse. Copse, leading into Maggots and Becketts.
Yeah.
So you've got those kind of corners which would be brought back to life if they just ripped half the wings off. And every single regulation set, there's still massive tons and tons of aero. Surely we could have an aero competition still with a third of the aero. Let the cars follow, take away the grip, bring back groove tyres. Everyone yells at me when I say that. But look at the groove tyre era of Formula One. People were struggling. You know, they're dancing around. They're searching everywhere for grip. And the reason it might have gone sort of a bit wrong in the end was everyone had to then downforce their way out of that lack of grip. And you saw the winglet wars. We had, you know, all every available surface had a little mini front wing on it. But that's the thing. Aerodynamics, again, is basically leading to the thing that everyone complains about, yet they never do anything about the aero.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a constant frustration, isn't it? And I don't know. It's weird. Despite all the things you talk about there, and there are so many eras and iterations of different aero, even, you know, remember the shark fins that appeared on the cars once?
That was 2018?
Yeah, but they had it before then as well. I have recollections of it when I was with ING Bank and Renault, which was way back. You know, that was towards 2007, 2008, 2009-ish. But there's been all sorts of iterations.
Tell us about the olden days, Uncle Tim.
Oh, them were the days. I can't remember them because I was usually drunk, because back in those days when I was doing all the races, and I was just pissed the whole time. I had a great time. Sort of pre-financial crash, when you could actually pay for things.
So to early 2000s, so 99 to 2006, that was in my 20s in the military. That was the time I followed F1 the least.
And
probably for that reason, because a lot of Sundays would just be written off, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Or you're traveling somewhere, or you're somewhere, you know, you're off at the, it's never Mallorca they fly you to.
No.
But yeah, so that's actually the era I'm least up on all the way. And then I sort of came back to it with Alonso being the champion. But I think a lot of the time when I turned on, it was a very similar era to what we're having now. So it was Schumacher absolutely dominating with a teammate that you could argue didn't have the same opportunities, but certainly wasn't challenging. Even when he broke his leg, he didn't end up challenging. So actually, is Eddie Irvine and Michael Schumacher pretty similar to Perez and Verstappen right now?
Yeah. Yeah, and Perez is an interesting one as well, isn't he? Because he's doing better this year, but he's still being outshone, isn't he, by his teammate. Yeah. Do you think his reputation's taken a bit of a hit?
Yeah, massive. I get so angry. I'm a big Perez fan. I followed his career right from the beginning. And I've always just loved the way he could think through a Grand Prix. And, you know, we've always known his top trump card isn't maxed out. So we've always known he's not like 10, 10, 9, 9, 9. But he's one of those kind of players that you would find, you know, in the Mighty Ducks. You know, if the Mighty Ducks went and played that team on the street, the street hockey team, and there's one guy who couldn't do anything, but he could hit it real hard. And, you know, you get those, you get the goalkeeper who's got a great goal kick, but he can't jump. So it's that kind of top trump card that Perez always had. And he would produce these amazing results when things fell into his particular, you know, he had a reputation, people forget, as being a tire whisperer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of just being able to make these amazing strategies work. Was great at the goal hanging that Russell does as well, goal hang for a safety car. And I think he picked up 9 podiums from the midfield and a race win. There's not many other midfield journeyman drivers, if you like, who've got that kind of record. He was absolutely outstanding midfield driver. And then his reputation has been absolutely destroyed. But when there's someone who's getting those results and doing that well in the midfield, and then he goes to a team where 3 other people have struggled. So Ricciardo's had to basically run away because he's seen the writing on the wall. Much fancied Albon goes there, gets destroyed. Gasly looks like a mug. Gasly looks like a mug at Red Bull. Yet nobody has afforded any logic to Perez to go, maybe it's not all just that Perez is arse suddenly, like all the other drivers who got that second seat. So I get a little bit angry, but that is fanboy bias coming through. I accept there's bias in that, but that's where I stand.
I've always found him as well, just he's not the most charismatic, is he? So, you know, has that had an impact? You know, is it the Paul de Resta impact? You know, you're just a little bit boring.
Paul de Resta. Yeah, he's not on Sky anymore, is he?
No.
That was really funny. That was really funny. No, just my mind's going mad now because you've talked about Paul de Resta. But he was so... He didn't mind showing his emotions and who he was kind of batting for. If you're on mainstream media, you're meant to kind of keep it down a little bit. When you're me and you, you can be biased and people can take it or leave it. When you're on like a national broadcaster, I think Johnny Herbert was the opposite side and maybe he suffered because Johnny Herbert never hid it when he thought, you know, I think when Verstappen just absolutely mugged and then landed on top of Hamilton at Monza. Yeah, he was very openly like, oh, that was a mugging. Damon Hill called it a professional foul. Paul de Resta was like the other way with Verstappen. And then I think they must have had a decision where they go, no, we need it much more neutral and down the line. Personality-wise, how important is that to fandom? Also, Perez is speaking in not his native tongue.
Yep.
I think that makes a big difference. So Tsunoda probably has that same issue as well. You can't come across... how you want to. You know, do you have a even slight second language, bit of Spanish, anything like that, Tim?
Absolutely not. No. I can speak about 3 words in Arabic.
Well, there you go. So if you had to do all your interviews in Arabic, I'm so useless at languages that my first language was Tagalog in Manila. And then I came here and I have completely unlearned that.
No.
Learned a whole new language from scratch. And then that's now the only language I can speak.
That's a travesty.
That's horrible.
That's upsetting.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Well, I can make it more upsetting if you like. My grandmother was very... She was the one. She was saying like, no Tagalog here. Don't speak that here. You're in England. You have to be English. Oh. And she would always say to me, right? it was like Pinocchio. She'd always say to me, a real English boy would... That was all her sentences. So if I did something she didn't like, she'd go, ah, but a real English boy would. So you always get that fit, but you're not. But then the blue fairy came down and granted a wish.
Spanish.
You've taken it down a dark path there. I told you it was odd, my childhood.
I feel like we could get really deep into this and probably make you cry.
No, God, no. No, no, no.
Don't shed
it deep,
a tear.
Deep down in a tight, angry ball. So, yeah. So Tsunoda's having to come across like that. It comes across very differently. I think I would imagine... You'd have to be a lot more guarded in a second language. It would be very easy to be misinterpreted. And so you can see, obviously, Perez can communicate fine, but he doesn't sound relaxed. Go and listen to an interview where he's speaking in Spanish and the tone and the vibe is completely different. Even Verstappen, you know, listen to Verstappen doing Dutch interviews and he comes across completely differently. So, yeah, I mean, Verstappen comes across... on most of our media as very serious, very boring.
Yeah, like cold. A bit like
cold Darth Vader. Watch him in his natural environment, the streams he does from home with his team, I think Redline or whatever. he seems like such a nice lad. And then you listen to him talking to Dutch media, again, completely different and warm. So, yeah, I don't know if we're always going to get, you know, the main charisma from people. Yeah, yeah. That was starting off talking about Perez, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm talking about the driving side. I don't know. Do we need F1 drivers to be cracking jokes like Lando Norris, banging in improv, treating every interview like Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I'd like to see someone like Alex Albon, this version of Alex Albon, Alex Mark II, back in that seat. Do you think he could compete on a slightly more level playing field with Verstappen if he went back there?
At Red Bull, no one can. Right, so this sort of gets treated like it's controversial, but that team is based around Verstappen.
Yes.
And the car is based around, people always say, fight back on this. People always fight back on it, but the car is built around Verstappen.
Of
this
course.
Is what happens,
yeah,
with the great champions, though. Alonso's teams are based around Alonso. Why do you think he kicks off so much? He's like one of those, you know, when the queen bee gets born out of an egg and then it goes and finds the other queen bees and eats them. I think that's how bees work. Or that could be octopuses. I'm not sure.
It sounds accurate.
It sounds like bees or wasps or something like that. That's what Alonso does. I remember one thing. There was Monza and Kimi Raikkonen was his teammate, right? And there was no hint that they didn't get on. But they asked him about the grid positions. And he said, well, if you look, it's by pair. Everybody's with their teammate, except me. My teammate's back there. Look how good that makes me. Yeah. And he's always doing stuff like that. You know, he really made Ocon seem like the bad guy as well when he was at Alpine. We all know what happened with Lewis Hamilton. So Lewis Hamilton came in there with big alpha vibes and he wasn't having it. He wasn't tolerating it. So the great champions do that. Schumacher, of course, did that. Hamilton hasn't done it, which is probably to his detriment. And when he says stuff like, oh, I just want, you know, I want a fair fight. I want to fight on level terms. I believe him and I think he's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah,
have done that. You know, he should have been stamping his authority on teams.
It's the Alonso one's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, when you talk about the alpha male or the number one driver. I mean, Alonso is Alonso's greatest fan, isn't he? I mean, he is the greatest driver in the world ever, according to himself. And you know, he is a fantastic driver, and he's just signed his this long term contract with Aston to stay there as a driver and beyond. So what
do you believe the things where they said he could have driven for Red Bull, but they didn't know if Verstappen was going to be there or not?
I don't know. I mean, I think Fernando's onto a good thing there at Aston. He can see out his career there. He can have a nice time, get paid a load of money, and get a job at the end of it all. I would love to gaze into a crystal ball and see what that end game is for Alonso, because he's clearly going to stay at that team after he's finished racing. In what capacity, I don't know, but I would love to see in 10 years what he's actually doing. Do you have any steer on where you think he's going with that contract?
I think the most important thing to him is looking good. So I believe fully that he would rather be beating Lance Stroll, fighting for the odd podium, than losing out to Verstappen, even if it meant the odd win. So like, if you look, he's always, how many times has he said, this was my greatest race ever? He's had about 20 greatest races ever. And he's always keen to point that out. Oh yeah, well, I finished P15, but my goodness, you know, a mortal would have finished P17. And so I believe it. I buy into those. I think it's perfectly plausible that if he spoke to Red Bull and they said, yes, we'll definitely have you, but we actually don't know if Verstappen's going to be here or not. And he said, no. I believe that and I agree with him. I think nobody should go and do that second seat at Red Bull. Absolutely no one. Not Albon, not Alonso, not Hamilton. But yeah, so I think that's just how that team is set up. And if I ran a team, Spanner's F1.
Oh, it's got a ring to it.
Spanner's F1 team. Yeah. So if I ran an F1 team, I would always have that clear number one. I think you could be more constructive with the second driver and not just destroy them, destroy their reputation, you know, kick them to the curb, Albon, Gasly, etc. But I would definitely, I'd want my Schumacher, I'd want my Hamilton, I'd want my Verstappen, for sure.
Yeah. Now we've got China coming up. Sprint race. We've got a sprint race in China.
4 a.m.
Oh, is it 4 a.m.? Oh, Jesus. Right, yeah. I probably won't get up for it. I'm not going to lie.
I will be up. I'll be there.
You're hardcore. We've got a sprint race. It's the first time we've been back at that circuit for a little while. 2019 was the last race there, which Lewis Hamilton won. There's a little bit of jeopardy here, isn't there? This is not a foregone conclusion. We do have a sprint race. We're back at a track we haven't been to before. There was some rumours about resurfacing or something. Do you think we're going to see potentially a bit of action?
I was just speaking to my mate Chester, who is a part of the online broadcast for the F1 coverage in China, and I think he's nervous. So he gave me a full rundown on it, which is there's a new track surface, and it's always a risk. So everyone immediately thinks of Turkey, Turkish Grand Prix, where they relayed the track surface 2020, and then they had the sort of resin bitumen.
Yeah.
Glue hadn't set yet, and that was fun. It was fun to watch Istanbul. So you might have that, a more high speed version of that. No grip kind of makes it interesting, and there's rain around. So looking at the forecast, there's rain on Friday, and there's rain on Saturday and rain on Monday. But those things move around a lot. So there's definitely a chance of a wet sprint race for sure. And you kind of go, well, what do you want? Are you an agent of chaos, Tim? Is that what you want?
Yeah, I want a bit of chaos. I actually do. I would like to see some chaos. I think we all would. No, not necessarily. I would like just to see a non-Red Bull-dominated race. And if that means there's a bit of a funny thing going on with the track, or there's a bit of weather around, or unfamiliarity with the track, because some of the drivers haven't been there before because it's not been on the calendar for a while. But I just want to see a bit of excitement spanners.
Max Verstappen has been to China before, so he'll be fine there. Max Verstappen's quite good in the wet, so careful what you wish for.
I know.
So you could just have a circumstance where it just, you know, makes him go further away. We sort of drifted away from what is the state of F1, and look at us both here talking about a Verstappen win,
sigh.
But I'm not a Verstappen fan. I'm an outed Hamilton fan. So if I was a Verstappen fan, Would I be bored? I think even the Verstappen fans now are hoping for something different. It's not quite the win you want. As a Hamilton fan, 2019 felt a bit like that, but everyone still thought that maybe Bottas would be a challenge. And then Ferrari, inexplicably, for no reason at all, suddenly had loads less power for reasons we can't legally say, but they were using too much fuel and got penalised for it. So, allegedly, but they did.
I mean, you said it, yeah.
Yeah, come on. I'd love Ferrari to sue me over that. That would be great. Come at me.
Good for the profile.
Yeah. And then 2020, it was just uninteresting. So, as a Hamilton fan there, you look at 2020 and you go, oh, it's not very interesting. And for people who didn't like Mercedes 2014, 2016, at least the teammates were fighting against each other out the front. And there's been classic seasons in F1 like that. You know, you have the Williams being really dominant. How weird does that sound to say?
I know.
Believe it or not, kids.
Yes.
The Williams used to be occasionally incredibly dominant, and you'd see their two drivers fighting it out. So I've sort of stopped defending F1. And I think that's a key one for me, because I've seen periods of domination in F1 throughout my life, and it happens. And the Schumacher one was the closest to this, where he'd go and win by 50 seconds and it was almost inevitable. And then you'd have that bit of hope at the beginning of the season, and then you'd see how strong the Schumacher-Ferrari combination was, and you go, oh no, it's happened again and again and again. And this is the problem with this period of domination. We 2021 was amazing and gripping. 2022 seemed briefly interesting, mainly because they were having the odd DNF and some reliability problems. Every race he finished, he won. Yeah. So Red Bull won the races they finished, yet everyone was saying, oh, Leclerc's going to run away with this. This is going to be boring watching Leclerc run away with this. But actually, that was a massively dominant car in 22. And then 23, you go, oh, well, again. I think 23, people had already had enough. And you speak to podcasters, YouTubers, I speak to a bunch of them, as you do. Everyone was reporting their figures were down.
Yeah.
The general interest has gone down. How many have quit? How many F1 podcasts have quit? Quite a few big independent podcasts look at that and go, it's just not worth our while anymore. The interest isn't there. And then you go 2024 and there's a vibe that Mercedes are going to be on top of it. They're being really positive. McLaren are saying, whatever it takes, we're going to do this. Ferrari do look genuinely decent. But then for Red Bull to come out and be dominant again, the world's turned away. And it's such a fumble. It's such a fumble from Formula One to allow it to get to that point, because they had gold. They had gold. Drive to Survive, built up the audience, classic 2021 season that will be spoken about forever. And then 3 years of one driver, one dominant car. I'm not, from a sporting point of view, like you were saying, you can say, oh, fair play, Red Bull, like, well done. But from a business point of view, what have they done?
Yeah.
How have they sleptwalked into yet another dominant runaway series? Imagine having 2013 with Vettel, you know, when he was running away 20 seconds every race, and then having two more years of that. You just wouldn't, even if it was your favourite driver, you just wouldn't want it.
No, it's a funny one. And actually, you know, you mentioned there people like Schumacher winning by 50 seconds. People who are new to the sport won't remember that people used to win by laps. I mean, even in my, me watching when I was growing up, I remember seeing, you know, Mansell win by two laps. You know, so you sort of think, well, we're a lot closer now than we were. But even so, you know, the margins may be smaller, but it's still people running away with it.
Verstappen could lap the field, I think, especially last season. There are races where he could lap the field. I think the difference is now you would never use your tyres up to build a big gap.
No.
So, yeah, because there could be a safety car and then you've used your tyres up for no reason.
You, as you say, are a Lewis Hamilton fan. You must be quite excited about the prospect of him going to Ferrari. I think Ferrari are probably not so excited now, seeing how good Carlos Sainz actually is.
Oh yeah, Carlos Sainz, he's been good for a couple of races. That undoes everything. That's the same as 7 world championships, 103 wins.
But Spanners, I've recently got into TikTok, right? I've started paying a bit of attention to TikTok.
Yeah, and, me too, man.
And I'm enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun on it because you get a lot of interaction. You know, you post a video, people comment. And there's been a lot of comment around this whole Lewis Hamilton thing and the motivation for doing it. You know, is it sporting? Is it financial? Is he looking after his future? What's your take on the whole thing? Putting aside the fact that you're a fan of that man, what's your take on the move?
Yeah, I think it was at the time I was devastated. So absolutely, like, if you wanted to bathe, if you don't like me because I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan and I give hot takes and I say things like Daniel Ricciardo is secretly evil, like Lord Business in Lego Movie. if you want to see genuine pain, you know, you can go back to my reactions. I think during the podcast where we covered it, I think occasionally I just stopped and went, no, no, why? Because it's just so horrible to see the thought of Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari, of all people, the Death Star. That's Michael Schumacher's team. Do you know what I mean? That is your wife going off with your best mate territory. And then you get invited to the wedding. No. It was horrible. But the saving grace is this Ferrari is not your grandfather's Ferrari. No, this isn't even your dad's Ferrari. This is not Arriba Venne, who is probably, I don't want to be libel you on your show, but he's probably evil, could definitely be a mafia boss. Dominicali, John Todd, you know, this the not nice Ferrari, the ruthless Ferrari. I think Fred Vasseur's Ferrari isn't that.
Different vibe.
And they seem to have a lot of, yeah, different vibe, a lot of likable characters, two drivers as well that I like. And I love to hate Ferrari. So that's, you know, it's not a genuine hate thing. It's like they're a great team to hate. But they had become kind of not good enough to hate as well because of the fumbles, you know, the constant strategy errors, the constant just dropping the ball on things. And what it was painful actually watching Vettel throw away those opportunities in 2017, 2018. Because Vettel's another, he's one of my pantomime baddies as well. I love to hate Vettel.
Vettel used to be hated. He was the pantomime villain, and now he's everyone's favourite.
All the DTS fans are like, oh, Uncle Seb with his B hotel. But no, he was Das Finger, wasn't he? He was ruining. And at the time when Vettel was dominating, I was really into football and England were just getting caned by Germany every 5 minutes, it felt like. You know, there was like so you'd have Schumacher absolutely dominating Formula One. You'd have the Germans knocking us out of football tournaments. And then you'd have Vettel then suddenly turns up and you go, oh, no, not another German. Mm. Oh, no, he's winning everything as well.
Yeah.
So he definitely, loved to hate him. So when he was at Ferrari, that was like a perfect combination for me. It was my driver doing well against a team I hate and a driver I hate in a sporting sense. So that was actually one of my favourite, about 2017, 2018. So if he'd have moved then, if Lewis had then, after 2020, said, right, I'm going to Ferrari, that would have been a hate, and I don't want to do hyperbole, but that would have been a heinous betrayal, comparable to murder. Multiple murder, I would say.
Wow, multiple murder. Blimey.
Seven or eight murders. Mm. That would have been the level of crime if Hamilton had gone to Ferrari then. But isn't it interesting, like just 4 years later, after my initial meltdown, I was then, I'm okay with it. And actually, you know, I've got a Ferrari hat in preparation.
Well done, you.
I've got a Ferrari onesie.
Wow, that I don't want to see, but yeah, good.
I'm going to send you the photos after this.
Thank you.
And I'm ready. I'm ready to be Tifosi. And I'm ready to be a lifelong Ferrari fan, I think.
Congratulations. I think that's very admirable.
I just want to add as well that one of the things that made that easier was I put a tweet out saying, hey, Ferrari fans, like, are you happy about Hamilton going to Ferrari? And universally, the Tifosi are delighted. Lifelong Ferrari fans are delighted that Hamilton is coming there. They're so, so pleased that it made me go, oh, well, maybe there's a, can we merge? Like, what happens? You know, are we all moving in together? It's like our divorced parents are moving in together and now we're going to be step siblings. And so, like, who gets the top bunk? What's dinner like at their place? I'm ready. I've got to learn the Italian anthem, actually. Reminder.
Yeah, good point. Learn the anthem. No, it's great. I mean, he's got history with Fred. So, you know, they go back a long way, those two, back to the junior days. I think, like you say, he's created a different atmosphere at that team. So, yeah, I think he'll be all right.
The things against it is Ferrari do tend to Ferrari every now and then. You know, Ferrari has become a verb in Formula One. Lewis Hamilton is older. It's hard to tell with all the experiments and stuff going on. And, you know, last year on race pace, he seemed to be very much on top of George Russell, and you go, well, Fernando Alonso is still performing at a high level. I think Lewis is, what, 38? At 38, you know, you can feel, you're 43 as well, Tim. You can just feel, you've got a sense of, we can still run, we can still lift, but you can feel inside you that, like, your death is closer than it was. And every single...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And things do start to ache. I was at the doctor's just yesterday, Spanners, getting my back and hip checked. A little bit sore, you know? Yeah, knocking on a little bit. These things do happen. Yep. I think Lewis will be all right. I think this year, it's like when you quit a job, isn't it? You know, you quit a job, you serve out your notice period, and you don't give it your all, do you? You know, you kind of take your eye off the ball a little bit. So, you know, I'm putting Hamilton in that camp. I think people are giving him a hard time this year. He's not been great, but he's checked out. He's with Ferrari, you know. Whatever.
The one thing you can do when you have a situation like this is it's like when you have a lottery ticket and you might win the lottery. So it's the hope is what you're investing in. When you buy a lottery ticket, and this is what rich kids don't understand, when they go, oh, it's a tax on stupid, right? Is that when you have your lottery ticket in your hand, buy it as far out from the drawer as you can bear. And then in that time, you've got the potential, you've got the hope of a better life, of the dream coming true. And it almost doesn't matter that it gets dashed and then it goes because you can enjoy the hope. So in this period, before he goes to Ferrari and it all goes horribly wrong, we have that hope. We have that lottery ticket. So it's not a tax on stupid. It's a tax on hope.
Love that. What a perfect way to sign off in that segment. Now, listen, Spanners, we've got about 10 minutes left. So I'm going to push you into the final three questions, which we ask all of our guests, although I have created a new one, which is number three, which I haven't asked anyone before. So, you know, we must be nearly up to 200 shows now. And I don't think I've ever asked this question. So number one, first one for you, and this could be motorsport related or otherwise. What's got you excited at the moment?
In life?
Generally, whatever you want.
Oh, okay. Do you know what's got me excited? It's going to sound like just shameless self-promo, though.
Go on, do it.
Is the foray of Missed Apex into different motorsports. So that's what's got me excited. I was up late with our MotoGP podcast, which is nowhere near as good as your one. It's nowhere near as experienced. I shouldn't have said good. I should have said experienced.
There you go.
Sorry, Kyle. Sorry, Adam. It's really good.
Quick, edit that bit.
But I was, you know, I was sat up producing for them. You know, I'm not on that show, but I was sat producing them, and I'm watching Kyle, who's brilliant on our F1 show, learning to be a host and a producer and putting the show notes together. And then we're bringing in, you know, new voices who've been, we've known from our community, who are like, can we get involved? Yes, there's some novice is there who've never done a podcast before, and there's veterans who have done loads of the Missed Apex shows, combining together about this sport I know nothing about and I'm not into, but seeing them all develop, watching them grow, you know, this is like 7 or 8 episodes in, and the difference is vast. And so helping that project go has been really great fun, and without the pressure of my opinion, my hosting. So really focusing on a production side of things has been great. And what they don't realize is I'm using them as a guinea pig, as experiments. So I'm trying all the new AI tools on them. You know, there's a vast array of things available to podcasters at the moment. So that's great. And then we've got a young dynamic team doing our Formula E podcast as well. And we approach that in a much different style. So we go, okay, we are essentially middle-aged dads sitting around a mic, and we've tried really hard to, you know, diversify. We've got people under 20 wow. on our show now. But you know, well, you've got the young, you're surrounded in young'uns.
You're
bathing in them.
Yes.
So watching that, and we go, right, okay, well, let's not do what we do at Missed Apex, which is drown on for 90 minutes. Let's go for like a more American style. So you go, okay, it's a recap. Boom. That's what the Americans like. Bit more dynamic. Two people go. And then, and watching that evolve and learning, that's what's got me excited, is basically moving from, do you do swearing or no?
I swear all you want.
Oh, I never swear. Okay. Going from just gobshite, just spewing whatever I want, to then being, looking at the production side and going, well, it's almost a little bit like empire building, but yeah, that's been fun. That's what I'm excited about in my work.
Very good. And we'll put links to all those new shows in the show description. Second one for you. What's one lesson that your job's taught you that you think everyone should learn at some point in their life?
Everyone. So it can't be podcast specific. It's got to be like life specific.
Yeah. Something that's really benefited you in your career that you think people need.
In my career. Okay. So, I mean, the boring one would be, look, my motto, which I say at the end of every show, is work hard, be kind, have fun. And that is something that I have said to my kids before school. You know, I drop them off out the car and I remind them. And every day I treat it like I've never said it before. And I'm like, guys, listen, today, try and work hard. And they go, be kind, have fun. I'm like, how did you know? How did you know what I was going to say? You're telepathic. But I really believe that in that order, you know, that's the way to go about things. I'm not being all performance podcast here, but you have to put the work in and you have to be focused and dedicated. And sometimes your amazing Jake Dennis interview that took you 7 hours to post-produce gets 17 views on YouTube and it crushes you, but you do the work. And then the being kind thing is just having a sense of fairness to the people around you, respecting everybody's time. And it's so easy and throwaway to say, but that just being kind is so often mistaken as weakness or I don't know, someone will probably call it woke at some point. Everything's woke, isn't it? So you go, if you are just, you just do the basics of fairness, then I feel like even when you lose, you win a little bit as well. I'm coming across as a right melt here. It's not a very ex-squaddy.
I like it.
It's not a very ex-squaddy
I like
thing
it.
To say.
Keep it going.
I should be ruthless. No, drag yourself up by the bootstraps. Right. So in that order, work hard, be kind, and then having fun is just the most important thing. Just not after those two most important things, just contradicted myself. But if you don't have a sense of fun in what you're doing and a sense of joy in what you're doing, then what on earth? Why are you doing it? What is your pursuit?
Couldn't agree more. And I feel very lucky because I love what I do for a living every day. I love it. I really enjoy it. And many of my friends are in banking and investment and, you know, all these things, big city proper jobs, and they're miserable.
Jobs.
They're grown-up jobs, but they're not happy. They're working every hour under the sun. They never take their kids to school. They never pick their kids up from school. They're never at home. And they miss out. And I feel very, very lucky that I'm doing what I'm doing and have the time to enjoy my family at the same time, even though sometimes I do want to get rid of them and, you know, just throw the kids down the toilet.
But yeah, most and if you had to pick one, which one would you pick?
Well, I'd pick the dog probably and just bin the kids. It's a drain on my mental health and financial resources.
I always say to my two, I say, we should have just had one kid, because I see families with one kid and you go, that's the better way. We should have had one kid. And my second kid, my daughter, always gets really upset about that. Like, so you're saying you wouldn't have me? And I said, well, I never said which kid we would have. So one little wrinkle in, you know, getting to do what you want to do, so I've been freelance since 2019, is just the constant stress and panic. So you do have to...
Yeah. It's tempered with that. And I've been freelance since 2012. January-ish 2012, I quit my job and decided to do stuff on my own. And there have been times where it's been a complete roll. I've had to rent out my house before. You know, during COVID, I had to just leave the house, rent it out for 6 months and go and live with the in-laws, because, you know, sometimes these things happen out of your control or in your control that you just muck up. It is a stress.
I'll briefly tell you my COVID one, which was that 2019 September, is I quit an engineering job with a pension. So threw away the pension, threw away the salary and went, we've got 6 months. Yeah, 6 months to make it in radio. I had a weekend radio show. Missed Apex was just starting to take off, riding the DTS wave a little bit. And I was doing lots of audiobooks, really enjoying those, because I love doing character voices and, you know, at the low level, you know, so I'd still pick up like 800, 900 and an audiobook, hard work. Like, okay, finally doing it, quitting that work, 6 months to make this work. And of course, that led exactly into the pandemic in March 2020. Mm. So the radio schedules all got shuffled. So I was off, air, gone, done, radio dead. There was no F1 running. So Mist Apex couldn't grow. And obviously there's no revenue from that. And none of the actors were working. So guess what they all did? They all bought a microphone and started doing voiceover and narration. And my wife's business completely collapsed because people couldn't go in person to do the vocal coaching that she was doing. So literally lost everything. And here was the kicker. If I'd have waited 6 months, I would have got all the furlough that everyone was getting paid to sit at home. We got absolutely nothing. It was crushing. And you go, oh my God, I've thrown away my entire family's security and future just to chase my stupid, stupid dream.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were the same. And I remember saying to Chloe, we got to a point actually nearly to the day that I got offered some contract work through a sports marketing agency. But I remember standing at King's Cross Station thinking, what am I going to do? And I didn't have a penny in the bank. Nothing. Literally nothing. And completely coincidentally had a call from Robin Fenwick at Right Formula, which completely turned my life around. And things went on from there. But yeah, tough times. It's not easy being a freelancer. Final one for you. And now this is the one I've never asked anybody at any point on any show.
I'm nervous.
So let's give it a go. What's one thing that nobody really knows about you?
Well, then everyone will know.
Well, they will. But it could be, okay, let me rephrase it. What's one thing that not many people know about you? So for me, like for example, no one really knows, unless I'm drunk and I'm talking about it, that I used to tour the world singing and sung for the Queen Mother and recorded an album, which is available on iTunes, everybody, but no one will ever find it because I never released the name of it. But it's one of those things that not many people know about me. Okay, so what's yours?
That's amazing. So you could sing?
Yes.
So apparently, in Miami, we're doing karaoke, yeah?
I'm well up for a bit of karaoke,
We're there. Brilliant. I warn you, like all Filipinos, I am amazing at karaoke. So
bring it on.
I have an unfair advantage. It's just it's genetics. It's in that's you. All. That's all. Mm. Okay, I really, really wanted to be an actor as a kid. That was my main pursuit. And I have actively auditioned for and got in front of the director of the movie, a martial arts action movie.
Wow.
So I have auditioned to be an action movie star.
That's amazing.
I didn't get it. So, but because we had a connection, I was able to get feedback that I probably wouldn't normally get. And it was, seems to lack dedication and motivation, lacks the physicality and can't act well.
Yeah, so there's a few issues. There's a few fundamentals there, which you're clearly lacking. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you need to, I guess, you need to stick at that kind of thing and push forward. I bet loads of people who made it have had that feedback, right? So I could have made it, but I still am holding out hope. So I still think, like we were talking, I still look 35. I could still be believably of military age acting. And my one ambition is to be the guy who's like the best friend in the war movie and talks about what they're doing when they're going to go home. And they're like, oh, this is Sally. She's so great. Sally. She's my world. And she's pregnant. Yeah. And our dog's having puppies. Yeah. And we're about to make the first payment on the farm that we're going to live happily on forever.
Yes.
And then I get blown up or something.
Yeah.
Sorry, I led you down a happy path.
And then
it got taken away. Your expectations got subverted and now you're heartbroken.
Yes.
But that's the role I want.
Oh, well, I think you'd be great at that. So pursue that dream. Don't let it die.
I sold it, right?
Yes.
I sold it to you.
I was fully in there. I was getting emotional.
Sally, no. What's Sally going to do?
Sally. I mean, who's Sally? Where's Sally come from?
I mean, I should have used my wife's name.
Damn it. Edit that one out.
And not her sister's name.
No. Yeah. Well, Spanners, look, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Is it? Are they always like this?
No. Well, usually I always say to people before we start recording, I forgot to say it to you, but I usually say, we'll keep it to half an hour. That's where we usually get to. We're now on an hour and 3 minutes as we record now with a little bit of editing.
That's my fault. Yeah. I go on. It's my fault, Tim.
Yeah. Well, it is your fault because you're the guest and it's your thing. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
We're both freelance bums and we don't have anything better to do.
Well, exactly. So, after this, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll go and read the paper on the toilet or something like that. Not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to eat pizza and then go in my weight loss group and go, I don't know why the scale's not coming down as I'm shoving more pizza in and then thinking about tacos.
Oh, I like a taco. Not as much as I like a
taco.
Subway.
Do you know, I could eat limitless tacos. Mm. I don't think there's a limit to how many tacos I could eat.
I used to live in the States and spent a lot of time in Taco Bell. Used to love it. Anyway, we're going off again. Right, Spanners, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll put various bits and pieces about your merch, your new line of merch, your new shows, and all the other things that are going on with Missed Apex in the show notes. For now, thank you so much for joining us on the Motormouth Podcast.